Welcome to episode 92 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for the week of March 10th, 2008. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. On this episode of the Fredcast, an update on the Fredcast National Bike MS team. The deputy kills two cyclists in Cupertino, a follow-up to the Alley Cat race. Cyclists sue Hammer Nutrition, Perry Nice, and Trek mourns for its founder. Following the news, do the test. The Garmin Edge 705 is available. A review of Johan Bruneel's upcoming book and an update on my training. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. The Fredcast Cycling Podcast is brought to you by listeners like you. Thank you so much for your donations, and thanks for clicking the links for all the various companies at www.thefredcast.com. Your donations and the small amount of money we get from those companies help support the Fredcast. We appreciate it all. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Hey, welcome back to the Fredcast. Great to have you with us. And I hope that you enjoyed the special episode of The Spokesman that I inserted into the Fredcast feed. I know that there's a lot of you who've been listening to the Spokesman since the very beginning, but I thought some of you might not be familiar with the show. So hopefully you enjoyed that. Well, this is the week of March the 10th, and something I've talked about here on the show time after time. This is MS Awareness Week, and as you know, my wife has multiple sclerosis, and I have spent a lot of time and effort raising money for and helping to plan various bike MS events around the country. You used to know them as MS-150s. They're now called Bike MS. And as I mentioned last week, we're going to be starting a national team Fredcast. I'll give you a couple of details on that on the other side of this announcement.
Movement. Something as simple as riding a bike. Multiple sclerosis stops people from moving. Bike MS raises money to fund cutting-edge research and provide programs and services to help people with MS and their families move their lives forward. And every year, we ride farther and push harder to move us closer to a cure. And that's where you come in. An unforgettable ride. An unbeatable destination. Bike to create a world free of MS. Join the movement.
So here's the plan, everyone. I know a lot of you have participated in MS-150 events for a number of years. If you're affiliated with a team already, that's great. I hope that you are getting as much out of being a part of a team as I have for the number of years that I've been involved in these events. But if you're not affiliated with a team, here's your opportunity to become involved not only with Bike MS, but also with the Fredcast. I got off the phone today with Ellen Penrod with the National MS Society, and we are starting a national team Fredcast. There are over 100 Bike MS events around the country, and you have the opportunity to be a team captain for Team Fredcast in your area. It's very simple. Send me an email. In the email subject line, simply say Team Fredcast. Let me know where you live, that you'd like to be a team captain or simply a team member of Team Fredcast, and which Bike MS event you would like to participate in. It's very easy to find a Bike MS event. There are, as I said, over 100 of them, and all you have to do is go to www.bikems.org in order to find the event in your area. I've gotten some emails from some of you who have already said that you want to be interested, and it's very easy to start a national team. All I need is four of you to agree to be team captains in four different events around the country. Of course, I'd love it if there were more than 100 of you, but we're going to start wherever we can start. I need a minimum of four. Once we get that, then together we can start building National Team Fredcast, and we can start looking for sponsors to start outfitting our team with Team Fredcast kit. We will also, once we're able to do that, start making Team Fredcast kit available on the Fredcast website to those of you who are not able to participate, so that you can still be a part of Team Fredcast, and a portion of the sales of those team gear items will go to the National MS Society. I'm excited about this. What a great time to start it during MS Awareness Week. I know a lot of you have expressed your concern for my wife. You've also shared your stories about people that you know who have multiple sclerosis. So I am looking forward to hearing from you. I'm looking forward to starting Team Fredcast. I'm looking forward to coming out to various parts of the country to ride with you, alongside you, in these various Bike MS events. I know that I just took up about 5 minutes of the show for this, but I think it's just that important, and I'm sure that you'll all understand. Send me an email, thefredcast@gmail.com. Put Team Fredcast in the subject line. Let me know you're interested. Let me know which event. And together, we will join the movement, and together, we will stop MS. Thank you so much. Well, let's get into the news for this week. And once again, unfortunately, the news is starting off on a sad note because the cycling community in Northern California has lost two of its shining stars, and a third cyclist was seriously injured when Deputy Santa Clara County Sheriff James Council reportedly dozed off at the wheel or had some sort of other problem, crossed the line, and plowed into these three cyclists. Killed in the crash was 29-year-old Matt Peterson of San Francisco and his riding partner, 31-year-old Christy Goff of Oakland. Also injured seriously in the crash was German cyclist Christopher Knapp, and he was recently discharged after spending 2 days recovering in the hospital at Stanford Medical Center. Now, Matt Peterson recently won a local race, and it was, well, to him, according to his friends, it was just the pinnacle of his cycling career, and he had been visualizing the win of this race for a very long time. Christy Goff, well, she is a former Ironman champion and also a very accomplished cyclist. This is a very sad story, especially when you consider the fact that this deputy sheriff quite obviously simply fell asleep at the wheel or had some sort of other major malfunction while he was driving. Now, he's been placed on administrative leave while they continue the investigation, but this is just a very sad incident. Meanwhile, there will be a number of memorial rides, it sounds like, for these slain cyclists, the first of which is occurring this coming Saturday, March 15th, where they will be honoring the lives of Christy and Matt, and this is being put on by Team Roaring Mouse Cycles and Third Pillar Racing Team. This will be a joint memorial ride to honor the two cyclists. It's going to begin at 2:30 p.m. Well, that's when you'll meet. The ride will begin at 3, and that's happening at Foothill College. And I have put a link in the show notes to where you can find more information, because if you're in the area, this would be a great thing to participate in. The ride should be about 30 to 45 minutes. You are riding to the crash site. It will be a very mellow ride, a very somber ride, but I think very healing for the cycling community in Northern California. Now, if you've already listened to the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast that I inserted into the feed, you know that Donna and Richard and I also talked about another incident with a deputy in Tucson who, thankfully, did not kill any cyclists, but certainly caused a number of injuries when he observed the cyclists taking up too much of the road, and therefore he crossed over the yellow line as well and turned on his lights to try to funnel the cyclists into the right side of the road. In doing so, a number of the cyclists hit their brakes, and you can imagine the chain reaction crash that occurred. Well, there is an attorney in the Tucson area who has a website. It's TucsonBikeLawyer.com. And in researching the story about the Bay Area cyclist, I noticed that on this Tucson Bike Lawyer website, he's got some information about the deputy involved in the Cupertino crash that is, in his words, quite alarming, and I'm going to read it to you verbatim from the blog. It says, some alarming information has surfaced about the officer's past. In 2001, he was charged with 2 drunk driving counts. He was also convicted of partaking in a speed contest in Los Angeles County. He was also background checked in the hiring process, and the department was aware of these past charges. After the crash, he was not required to submit to a blood alcohol test. Very worrying information about Deputy Counsel, the deputy involved in that crash in Cupertino. And as I said on the spokesman, I think that it is high time for law enforcement to have more training into cyclist rights and into awareness of cyclists on the road. And certainly, we need to make sure that deputies are not falling asleep at the wheel. Very tragic situation in both cases. Last week in the news, you remember I talked about the Alley Cat race in Chicago called the Tour de Chicago. And I got a little bit, well, I got a little animated in my coverage of that event. I got a lot of email from you, a lot of feedback, most of it positive. Most of it, you agreed with my comments about the race. But I also got some email where some of you told me about some quote-unquote Alley Cat races, which occur under much better circumstances. They're simply not officially sanctioned. They're not done in cooperation with law enforcement, but they're done under much safer conditions, and they sound like they could be a lot more legitimate. So I appreciated hearing from you on that. But I also received a comment on the blog from listener Jamie, who has his own blog, and took me to task specifically about the possibility that I may have taken Mr. Wilson's comments out of context. If you haven't heard last week's show, I urge you to go back and do so. So I wrote a response to Jamie on his blog and also on the Fredcast, and I promised Jamie that I would read that response on the show as well, because I think that it makes some important points. And so to Jamie, I said, thanks for a well-written and well-considered blog post. I re-listened to my story on the death at the Tour de Chicago, and while I stand behind what I said in general, I think that I should clarify a few points. I will do that here on the show, on his blog, and also on mine as well, which I've now done all three. First of all, I think we need to separate the issue of this race from the larger issue of traffic laws, especially since Mr. Manger Lynch's death was reportedly as a result of cyclists not following the most basic of laws. In other words, running red lights. So let's talk about the race first, and then we can discuss traffic laws. I still believe that this so-called race and others like it should not continue. The simple fact that cyclists run red lights at breakneck speed just to win a meaningless event should have given someone a clue that a catastrophe like this was bound to happen. And it is bound to happen again. On that, I hope we can all agree. As for Mr. Wilson's comments, I took them as they were presented by the local TV station in Chicago, and I've put a link, by the way, in the show notes, so you can go back and watch that story if you like. So I don't know what questions were asked in order to elicit the responses that Wilson gave, or what answers were edited. So it is possible that they were taken out of context. But I do know that there were two parts to his comments, and that I tried to make that clear in the way I edited the piece. If that wasn't clear, then I will endeavor to do a better job in the future. And by the way, if it wasn't clear for that, I wholeheartedly apologize. Now, in the first part of his comments, Mr. Wilson said that it is, quote, an injustice to blame the victim because our culture is, again, quoting, so embedded into auto use and the convenience of autos that we're willing to let our friends and loved ones be killed, unquote. This is a totally specious argument when applied to this case. It implies that the SUV driver and or our entire so-called car culture is to blame for the death. Is it really fair to heap blame upon the SUV driver who was following the rules of the road and had no warning about a renegade bike race that was about to cross his or her path? Is it really fair to blame our car culture for causing the death of someone who chose to flout the laws and thereby disregard his own safety? I don't think so. Now, the second part of Wilson's quote talks about the inequity of traffic laws, and it is here that I think we have some common ground. Wilson says, quote, the laws don't reflect the liability of the vehicle. On this matter, he is absolutely right. As you all know, I've been doing the Fredcast for over 2 years, and I have talked time after time, and will continue to do so, about the attitude of motorists and the lopsided nature of our traffic laws. How many times have we all heard about a case where a cyclist is seriously injured or killed by a motorist's inattention or negligence? And the motorist just gets a slap on the wrist. How many times have we as cyclists felt that our lives were endangered by the careless, negligent, or intentional actions of motorists? The simple fact is that we do need laws that make sense, laws that protect the rights and lives of cyclists, and a government and law enforcement community that understands the dangers we face as cyclists. I wholeheartedly agree with the League of American Bicyclists and their desire to add an additional E to their E's that they're constantly talking about. And if you don't know what that is, I'll put a link in the show notes for that as well. As someone who has the ears of a great many cyclists, I will continue to talk about these matters on my show and to encourage my listeners to become involved in bicycle advocacy. So for Jamie and for all of you, I really do hope that that clarifies my opinion on this race, on Mr. Wilson's comments, and as well on my ideas about our need for equality under the law. I welcome any additional comments any of you may have, and perhaps more importantly, I would welcome Mr. Wilson on my show if he's willing. So if any of you know him, I would love to talk to him and do an interview with him, and if I do, I will be happy to bring that to you right here on the show. Well, speaking of Chicago, speaking of protecting cyclists and better laws that protect cyclists, the city of Chicago has now approved a new ordinance, which I think you will all agree with. The ordinance includes fines on motorists who turn left or right in front of someone on a bike, motorists who pass with less than 3 feet of space between the car and the bike, or who open a car door into the path of a cyclist. And fines for the violations range from $150 to $500. I know there's a lot of you out there who have been doored and you've been turned into and all of these things that we're talking about. I have as well. And so I have to applaud the city of Chicago and especially Mayor Richard Daley for enacting this new law. If you don't know, Mayor Daley is an avid cyclist and he has been a stalwart advocate for cyclists in the city of Chicago. When the measure passed, Daley was quoted as saying, "We are committed to making Chicago the most bicycle-friendly city in the country, and safety is a very critical part of the plan." More than 6,000 crashes between bikes and motor vehicles were reported in Chicago between 2001 and 2005. Unfortunately, 30 cyclists were killed. These new laws will help prevent injuries and save lives, unquote. So congratulations, Mayor Daley. I think that this is just a fantastic measure. I hope that other cities follow suit. I've certainly had my disagreements with Mayor Daley in the past, most specifically about what happened with Meigs Field there in Chicago and the way that he handled that. But he handled this issue spectacularly. So congratulations, you Chicago cyclists. You are perhaps among some of the best protected cyclists in the nation. Now, interestingly, the Chicago Tribune posted this on their website as a story and solicited comments from readers. I've put a link in the show notes to where you can find those comments, and I believe that you will find many of them to be quite frightening. The anger of the readers, and I'm assuming the motorists in Chicago, is palpable and very scary. I urge you to go to the show notes at thefredcast.com, click on the show notes for show 92, and read those comments. They will scare the life out of you. You know, from time to time, I get emails from listeners asking me, "Hey, David, is it okay if I take this particular supplement? Will it pass doping controls?" And in all of those cases, including one that I got recently from a listener in Mexico, I have to tell them that I'm not a chemist, I'm not a doctor, and I'm certainly not an expert on doping. And I refer them to their local cycling federation in the country in which they live for more advice. And I think that cyclist Amber Nebben and triathletes Rebecca Keat and Mike Vine wish that they had done a little bit more research into the supplements that they were taking because, according to Cycling News, they are suing Hammer Nutrition. According to court documents, all three of these athletes produced positive doping tests in competition. All three of them were sanctioned as a result, and all three of them were taking Hammer Nutrition's Endurolytes product. According to the Cycling News story, they had these products tested by third-party labs and were found that they, well, purportedly contained 19-norandrosterone, which is a metabolite of a banned steroid product. The athletes have hired Howard Jacob, who worked on the Floyd Landis case, and they are suing Hammer Nutrition. I don't have any comments from Hammer Nutrition as to their reaction to the lawsuit, but I think we will be hearing more about this in the weeks and months to come. But it does point out something very important. Even if you're taking something and you look at the ingredients and the ingredients don't say anything about banned substances, there is that possibility that the item that you're taking could be somehow otherwise tainted in the manufacture or in the packaging of the product. And you have to be very, very careful because according to the rules that I've seen, even if you took the product without knowing that it had a banned substance in it, you can still be sanctioned. So for all of you out there who are aspiring professional athletes, be very careful about what you put in your body. Well, it is time to talk about professional cycling, and that means it's time to talk about the quagmire that is Paris-Nice. Now, first of all, you should know that the race did begin as scheduled on Sunday, and there have been three stages and a prologue that have been completed. The prologue was won by Tor Husoft from Credit Agricole. Stages one and two by Geert Stiegmans from Quickstep. By the way, stage one, the distance was actually cut in half as a result of bad weather. And stage three today was won by Kel Karlstrom from Liquigas. And currently in the lead in the general classification, Sylvain Chavanel from France. And that is a big deal. The French are very hopeful that Sylvain can hold on to that lead all the way down to the sun in Nice later this week. We'll see what happens. But you remember, now getting to the controversy part of Paris-Nice, that there has been a lot of controversy surrounding this particular race. We talked about it last week. We talked about it on The Spokesman. I'm not going to rehash all of that, but I am going to talk about what has happened since we recorded those shows. First of all, you'll remember that there were a number of national federations that took a stance backing the UCI in this fight and telling Paris-Nice that they did not agree that... We're telling ASO that they didn't agree to take Paris-Nice into the French national calendar. USA Cycling had a little bit to say about that, and you can find their whole press release on the website at thefredcast.com. But I wanted to read you the last paragraph because I have to say that in this, I agree. It says, "Finally, we are convinced that if cycling continues down this path, it will only serve to create additional instability and uncertainty in our sport," and this is the key part, "at a time when it most desperately needs some level of sensibility. Professional cycling cannot survive without teams, and teams cannot survive without sponsors. Many teams are in renewal talks with their current sponsors, and many others are actively seeking new sponsorships. Anything less than a united front with regard to the International Organization of Professional Cycling presents an additional obstacle in all of our efforts to attract the sponsors our sport needs to grow and flourish." And on that, I have to wholeheartedly agree, because ever since this controversy began, my concern has been that cycling has had its black eyes over the last few years over doping. There have been all sorts of controversy and disagreements between the UCI and race organizers like the ASO. And now to have the ASO decide to take their race out of international rules, to ban teams from the Tour de France, especially the defending team or the defending rider, because Astana and Discovery, as many of you pointed out, are very different teams, really presents a very, very bad front for cycling. And so we really need some coming together of the sport. Well, you'll also recall that the UCI threatened the riders that if they participated in Paris-Nice, that they would be subject to disciplinary action by the UCI, perhaps even being thrown out of the Pro Tour. The riders then went to the Court of Arbitration for Sport to find out whether or not the UCI could indeed sanction them for participating in the race. But unfortunately, the court decided that because neither the UCI nor ASO had accepted the jurisdiction of the court to rule in this dispute, that they could not, therefore, rule. So in this case, there is going to be no decision from the Court of Arbitration for Sport. Meanwhile, the UCI is now seeking to discipline ASO, and they've initiated disciplinary proceedings against the French Cycling Federation as well. There is much that will come over this Paris-Nice situation. And now the International Riders Association on Monday has now asked to meet UCI President Pat McQuaid to clarify what the situation is regarding possible disciplinary action that the UCI may initiate against the riders. And they've asked to meet with Pat at the end of this week's Paris-Nice race. So there's much to come in regards to this whole flap over Paris-Nice. But if you're interested to find out which teams decided to participate in Paris-Nice, they are Crédit Agricole, CSC, Slipstream Chipotle, Leaky Gas, Milram, Bouygues Telecom, Quick Step, Castapagna, Française de Joux, Euskaltel, Euskadi, Gerald Steiner, AG2R, Silence Lotto, Cofidis, Rabobank, High Road, Agritubel, Skill Shimano, Lamprey, and Saunier Duval Scott. On the next episode of the Fredcast, I'll bring you the results of Paris-Nice and any results that have come out of this entire mess that is Paris-Nice 2008. One more bit of sad news for the bicycle industry and cyclists and cycling fans everywhere. Trek Bike Corporation is in mourning after the loss of Dick Burke, the company's co-founder and chairman. He died in a Milwaukee hospital on Monday of complications from cardiac surgery. And Dick Burke was 73 years old. Burke started Trek Bikes in 1976 with $100,000 in investment money and an idea that a high-quality American-made frame could somehow fill the gap between Schwinn, then the dominant American manufacturer, and imported Asian frames. He started Trek in a rented Red Pole barn in Waterloo, Wisconsin. With a payroll of five, they began handcrafting high-end steel touring frames. Trek, of course, grew from those humble beginnings into what is now the United States and perhaps one of the world's most well-known and well-respected bicycle manufacturers. Of course, Burke stepped down in 1998 as CEO, and he turned the day-to-day operations of the company over to his son, John Burke, who you've heard on this show before. John learned from his father, Dick, about bicycle advocacy and about how to run a successful business. Burke is survived by his wife, Camille, five children, and 11 grandchildren. Dick Burke, thanks so much for what you've brought to American and global cycling. And we, of course, wish you tailwinds. And that's going to do it for the news for this episode of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. Before we get to tonight's features, just a quick announcement. I want to remind you that we are still accepting registrations for the upcoming Fredcast Transalpine Adventure. This trip is going to be amazing. It starts June 25th in Salzburg, Austria, and ends July the 4th in beautiful Venice, Italy. Along the way, you are going to be cycling through some of the most amazing parts of Europe that you've ever seen and going over the Dolomites and some of the Giro d'Italia routes. This is going to be a great trip. Now, for those of you who are wondering, the trip price is $2,750, which if you consider everything that's included from your lodging to your meals and the transportation, the airport transfers, this really is just an incredible price. You know, the dollar is incredibly weak against the euro. And I think that if this trip was priced in euros, you'd probably be looking at double the cost. I know a lot of people are not planning on going to Europe this year, this summer, for vacation because they're afraid of the cost. But with the majority of the costs built into this trip, it is an incredible price on an incredible trip. And I've been pricing out airfares for myself and for some others who are going on the trip. And the airfare deals, especially right now, the airlines are offering some phenomenal round-trip airfares to Europe. So this is a trip that you just can't beat for the schedule, for the places we're going, for the riding we're going to be doing, for the camaraderie, and for the price. It really is a fantastic deal. Don't miss out on it. We only have a total of 20 spots on this trip, and I definitely want you to join us. Go to fredcasttours.com for more information, or of course, we do have a link in the show notes. So listen, if you are at all considering this, this is the time to sign up. We would like to get as many people signed up as quickly as possible and get this trip filled up. So please go to the website, contact us, and join us for an amazing trip in Europe. It's the Fredcast Transalpine Adventure, and I'm looking forward to riding with you. Don't miss it. You know, in preparing for tonight's show, I, you know, was trolling the web and all my various sources that I use to bring you the news and the features that I bring to you every week when I do the show. And over on Cyclicious, I found a link, and it was a link that I had read about on Twitter earlier today, and I had really ignored. But because Fritz had put it up there in Cyclicious, I followed the link, and it goes to a website in the UK called Do the Test. And what the test asks you to do, it's an awareness test. It asks you to count the number of basketball passes that one team of players initiates during the test. And I would urge you to go do this test and then to tell your friends and family to go do the test. I'm not going to give anything away, but count those basketball passes and then stay glued to the screen to learn more about the awareness test. That's all I'm going to say. There's a link in the show notes, and I urge you to go do this and to tell your friends about it. It is at dothetest.co.uk. Go check it out. I think you will be surprised what you learn. And I know you're wondering, what do basketball passes have to do with cycling? Go check it out. Well, for many of us, the day that we've been waiting for has finally arrived. And that day is when the Garmin Edge 705 GPS device finally became available. I've gotten reports from a number of you that you have finally received your Edge 705 units. And because you've received them, I haven't received mine. Garmin has promised to send me an evaluation unit. They've been promising for months and months, but because they had so many back orders and so much customer demand, they filled those orders, and rightfully so, first. And then the media will get their evaluation units. Carlton Reed in the UK is having the exact same issue. He and I have been commiserating by email over the fact that you're getting yours, but we're not getting ours. It sounds like we should have our Edge 705 next week. I will then begin start putting it through its paces and give you the results of my tests. I am expecting that I will like this device based on the test unit that I had a chance to play with just a little bit at Interbike. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with the difference between this device and the other Garmin cycling devices, well, this one starts with one very big difference, and that is a color screen. Besides the color screen, you can also get street-level detail maps, which you were not able to get on the previous cycling units from Garmin. And you can also use it for, as I understand, turn-by-turn directions when you are not riding your bike. I'm looking forward to seeing if that actually did come true. But the other thing, and something that a lot of you are really looking forward to, and I am as well, because you know how much I love convergence, is the fact that you will finally be able to pair this unit up with a power meter so that on one unit, you'll be able to display everything from speed to distance to, of course, map data, cadence, heart rate, and yes, power. And that is because of the Ant Plus Sport technology, the wireless technology that's built into the Edge 705. There are a number of power meters that have said that they will be compatible. One is the Cinco. We talked to them at Interbike, although as I understand, those are not quite ready for prime time yet. I've also been promised an evaluation unit of one of those when they become available. But iBike, the product that we have talked about here on the show before, they are now, I got a press release from them earlier this week saying that they do now have full compatibility with the Ant Plus Sport technology that's built into the Garmin Edge 705. What it means, however, is that you would need new firmware for your iBike, and there is a $99 charge for that firmware upgrade. You can find out more information on that at iBikeSports.com, but that's great news. We also hear that SRM should also be building the Ant Plus Sport technology into their power meters so that you'll be able to get your power right there on your Edge. If you've gotten an Edge and you would like to send in an audio review of your initial comments, we would love to have that. More details coming up at the end of the show as to how you can send in your audio review of your new Edge 705. Now, for some of you, you may not be interested in getting the Edge 705, or it may be out of your price range. So one of the things that a lot of us do is we use online mapping tools to try to find new bike routes. And one of the tools that I use for when I'm driving is Google Maps. I just like the simplicity and the power at the same time that Google Maps is able to provide. But Google Maps also has the ability to choose an option for driving and for taking public transit, and then it will route you appropriately. A number of people on the web have now initiated a petition asking for a bike there feature so that Google Maps would route you appropriately onto roads that are suitable for bikes if you decide to go to, from point A to point B on your bike, whether for commuting or training or anything in between. If you are interested in signing this petition, I have put a link in the show notes. And for those of you who are listening on the enhanced version of the podcast, the link is right there on your iTunes screen. Go ahead and click it, sign the petition, and hopefully someday soon, Google will put that algorithm into their Google Maps application, and you will simply be able to click a bike there option and get routed appropriately. I think it's a great idea. I signed the petition. I hope that you do too. One of the joys of doing this show is that every once in a while, something arrives in the mail that is completely unexpected and just bowls you over. And that happened to me last week. I went to the P.O. box where I get all of my Fredcast mail, not expecting that there would be much of anything in there. And there was a mysterious envelope. I opened it up and inside was a book that I didn't even know was going to be published. The book is called We Might As Well Win, and it's written by Johan Brunel, perhaps one of the most celebrated, certainly the most successful team director in the Tour de France. And it came to me from Houghton Mifflin Press, and I immediately started to read it. And I went on a business trip last week and had the opportunity to read the book, and I have really enjoyed it. Now, the book is going to be released in a couple of months. You can pre-order it on Amazon.com, and I've put a link in the show notes and in the Enhanced podcast to where you can pre-order it. But let me just give you a couple of my impressions of the book and then also read you a couple of excerpts from Johan's writing. Now, Johan wrote the book with Bill Strickland, and there is a foreword by none other than Lance Armstrong himself. One of the things that I was struck by in reading the book was that Johan has a knack for reading a peloton and for reading other cyclists. And he learned this partially as a professional cyclist himself, a reasonably successful professional cyclist, but also he seems to have an innate gift for judging people and for judging just the right moment when it's possible to gain an advantage. Now, of course, the book appealed to me as a cyclist and a cycling fan, but it will also appeal to those who are looking for those extra inspirational messages that can help you in your everyday life and also in your business life. He has a whole chapter on what it means to follow with your heart, but lead with your head, about never stopping to seek talent to surround yourself with, about, and this is very interesting when you think about professional cycling, about trusting people, but not products, never letting money make the most important decisions for you, and about how you can build the foundation for a victory through defeat. I'd like to read a couple of passages to you from the book so you get an idea of Johann's emotion, of Johann's mind, and of the book itself. At the beginning of the book, Johann says, "The Tour de France is the greatest sporting spectacle because it transcends bicycle racing. The Tour de France is like life. It's not a game or a series of games. It's a 2,000-mile, month-long odyssey that creates and breaks heroes, elevates some while diminishing others. There's unspeakable triumph and heartbreak, not in fleeting moments, but washing over you for sustained periods. There are disasters and illnesses. Babies are born while racers speed simultaneously away and toward home. Deep friendships develop, rivalries too. Bikes crash, so do cars. There are cheaters, and there always have been, though the methods have varied. The Tour de France is the only sporting event, someone once said so long ago, that you have to get your hair cut in the middle of it. This messiness and glory is what I think of when I say the Tour de France is like life itself. It's always where I had most desired and most sought to prove myself." And of course, prove himself he did. And much of the book, as much as it is about Johann and about his emotions, and his strategies and his beliefs about winning and about life and, yes, about business, much of the book is, of course, about the man who partnered with Johann to win 7 Tours de France. And that's really the way Johann looks at it. Much of it is about Lance Armstrong and about the accomplishments that Lance was able to achieve through that partnership with Johann Bruneel. A little story that Johann tells is about an issue that he had with Lance that he needed to take care of. But before he tells that story, he talks about the fact that he is well known in the caravan for being, well, aggressive as a driver as he supports his team. And one of the things that he says, and it's the subject, it's the title of a chapter. He says that basically sometimes you need to leave some dents, meaning that sometimes he does dent up that car, but that in doing so, it helps the team. And he tells the following story. "On my teams, we've always focused on the win. Sometimes this meant eliminating distractions. Early on, Lance would bring his laptop computer to the races. As with everything important to him, he was obsessive about checking his email and tracking the progress of his rival via internet reports from other races. The other guys followed suit, and soon it became clear to me that the laptop was harming our focus at least as much as it was helping us stay informed. The laptops had to go. I was nervous about telling Lance because he spent more time on it than anyone. But when I brought it up, explained my reasons, and pointed out 3 or 4 specific instances when I thought our focus had suffered, he gave me that aw shucks smile he sometimes gets. Then he shrugged his shoulders and said, 'You're right. I know I have to concentrate on the tour. Let's leave the laptops at home from now on.' And that became our policy. Lance got it. He wasn't worried about dents. He was driving toward the big goal." Another story he tells is about the need to make sure that you have good communication, whether that is with a business associate or whether that's with your racers as they race a mile ahead of you and you have the opportunity to speak into their ear and they have the opportunity to speak to you thanks to the marvels of modern radio technology. And Johann's team, Lance's team, was one of the first to use two-way radios the way that every team does now in the Tour de France and virtually every bicycle race around the world. And he tells what I think is a great story, not only about communication, but about humor and camaraderie. When Johann was communicating with Lance and helping him win a particular stage. At the end of the stage, Johann says, at some point, as he neared the finish line and what would be so far the greatest triumph of his cycling career, Lance's voice crackled through the radio. Johann, do you like apples? I looked over at Tom Wiesel, the owner of the team who was riding in the passenger seat beside me that day. I raised my eyebrows. Had Lance cracked? Was he babbling? Yes, I answered hesitantly. We like apples, Lance. I paused. Why? Then how, he said, do you like them apples? And he crossed the finish line, hands high, head tipped to the clouds. It's those kinds of personal conversations and anecdotes that you get in We Might As Well Win by Johann Bruneel, in addition to, as I said earlier, the insight into the man who has been the most successful team director in Tour de France history. I think that you will enjoy this book when it comes out. I urge you to pre-order it so that you're one of the first on your block to have it. It's 240 pages long, according to the copy that I've got. It should be $25, and it should be published June the 4th, 2008. Go to the show notes, pre-order the book. I know that you will enjoy Johann Bruneel's We Might As Well Win. Well, before I go tonight, I thought I would update you on how the indoor training is going during this winter season. First of all, obviously, I had a couple of weeks off due to my injuries, but I am now back on the bike and enjoying the indoor training. So let's talk just a little bit about the setup. And I've gotten some questions from some of you, so I want to clarify. I'm going to mention a couple of products here, none of which have paid me to mention their products, none of whom are paying me in any way to talk about their products. These are just simply the items that I am using based on the advice of my coach, Rich Wharton. And the first one is something that, quite honestly, when I first saw at an Interbike trade show, oh, those many years ago, I thought was a video game, and I didn't realize the value of until I started using, and that is RacerMate's CompuTrainer. A lot of you are using indoor trainers where you are able to vary the resistance on your rear wheel, but you have to vary that resistance manually. The CompuTrainer is an amazing piece of technology because it connects to your computer, and based on whatever program you are running, it is constantly varying the resistance on your rear wheel. As an example, today my workout was a 1 hour four-man team time trial using the ERG videos. You remember we spoke with Paul Smulders from ERG videos on the show earlier this year, and he told us that he had taken helmet cam videos, married those to the CompuTrainer technology, and that when on your video screen, you approached a hill, when you got on that hill, your bike riding got harder. Today, in this four-man team time trial, it was filmed with two cameras, one on my head, or in other words, the rider whose eyes I was looking through, and one on the head of one of the other team members in our four-man group. And when my rider went to the front of the pace line, I had to work because I was using his power profile. So, you know, when you're in a pace line and you're at the front, you are working the hardest. And then when my rider went to the back of the pace line, I had a little bit of a rest. And it was constantly that way for an hour where I was working harder and then easier depending on what I was seeing on the video screen. Now, I'm using the ERG video in conjunction with the CompuTrainer multi-rider software, but you can also use it with CompuTrainer's coaching software. Either way, you're able to see on the screen not only where you're going on the video and what's coming up ahead. And you know, it's really funny. As the guys would approach a turn, I found myself actually trying to lean the bike over to get into the turn with them. I mean, it really is that immersive of an experience. Well, in addition to the video on the screen, you're able to see your power output. You're able to see your heart rate. You're able to see your cadence. It is really an excellent training tool. You're also able to see your course profile so that you know what's coming up and whether or not you can take a drink from your water bottle now, or whether you need to get down in the drops because you've got a really hard pull coming up. I've really, really enjoyed it. Now, admittedly, when I first got the CompuTrainer, I found it a bit daunting. Simply the setup that's involved and the number of wires that you've got to run for your cadence and to your computer and to your handlebar mounted device. And then, of course, once you get started with it, you also have to calibrate the CompuTrainer every single ride. So I have a 10-minute warm-up before every single workout when I get on the CompuTrainer, and that is to calibrate the power setting for that day. Now, the CompuTrainer requires a PC, a Windows PC. I don't have a Windows PC. As you know, I'm a Mac user, but the new Intel Macs will run Windows under one of two circumstances, either completely natively, where you reboot the computer in native Windows mode, and it is a full-blown Windows PC, or you run it as a virtual appliance inside Mac OS, whether you're using Parallels or VMware to do that. I found that I was unable to run the CompuTrainer software reliably under virtualization. So what I do is when I'm done working for the day, I reboot my laptop into Windows, take it into the room where I work out, plug it into the computer, and it works flawlessly. And I have the added benefit of the fact that I've got an LCD projector from work, so I'm able to project my workout and the video onto the wall, so I get it a lot larger. For those of you who don't have that, I recommend probably a large monitor or using two monitors to get the full experience. It works extremely well. When I'm done, I put all of that data into what used to be called Cycling Peaks, but which Peaksware now calls WKO Plus. That way I can get all the metrics right there on my screen, compare them for previous days and previous weeks, upload them to my coach, and then he can analyze them. As for me, I'm feeling great. I'm amazed at the quality of the workout that I'm able to get in 1 hour indoors. There is no doubt that I'm getting a more concentrated workout, but in some cases, I believe that I am getting better physical fitness, better power, and better speed because I'm training indoors. When the snow melts and the cast comes off my hand and I'm able to get outside, I have no doubt that my speed and power will have increased as a result of training indoors. However, for those of you that are thinking of doing this, I would recommend that you consider working with a coach, certainly for the first few months or perhaps the first year, because that is how you are going to learn how to properly use your indoor trainer. I'm pleased with the results so far. Of course, when I get to the Dolomites in June, the proof will be on the roads of Austria and Italy. Nevertheless, I will keep you posted on my training progress over the next few weeks. If you have any questions about what I'm doing and about a good setup for you, email me or feel free to contact Coach Rich Wharton. I'm sure he'd be happy to give you some advice on what you can do for your own setup. And of course, I'm sure he'd be happy to sign you on as a client as well. You'll find a link to Rich and all the products I've talked about in the show notes for today's show. Well, that is mostly going to do it for the Fredcast for episode number 92 for the week of March the 10th, 2008. Before we go, just a couple of notes, ways that you can stay in contact with the Fredcast. A couple of ways where I can keep in contact with you. The first is Twitter. If you're not familiar with Twitter, it is a phenomenon. It is really like broadcast text messaging where we can also communicate. I have a number of followers on Twitter who send me messages. I send them messages back, and the entire community is able to share in those and learn from them. You can find me on twitter.com. My username is Fredcast. Or if you simply want to follow my Twitters on your cell phone, and of course, remember, normal text messaging charges can apply, you can text the words follow Fredcast to 40404. And then you'll start getting my Twitters. You can also join the Fredcast Feed Zone email list. That's for our irregular newsletter. I send that out every once in a while, and that's a great way to keep in touch with what's going on here on the show. And of course, you can send me email or audio comments anytime. The email address is thefredcast@gmail.com, and you can send audio comments there if you are so equipped. Or you can use a number of other ways to send audio comments. Of course, there's the Fredcast listener hotline at area code 435-258-6FRED. That's 435-258-6373. You can send me a Skype voicemail. My Skype address is thefredcast. Or using your computer and no additional software, you can use any one of three different voicemail services: TringMe, MyChingo, and Odeo. All of those are listed on the website and in the show notes for today's show, and you can find the show notes and the website at www.thefredcast.com. And by the way, I'd urge you to visit thefredcast.com every couple of days, because I seem to be posting more and more news items and opinion pieces on the site, and I'm hoping to be doing more of that in the future. So make sure you're visiting the website on a regular basis. Well, it's time for that part of the show that we do every show, and that is our PodSafe cycling music. Now, this week, our PodSafe cycling music is coming to you from a new service. This was a service that was recommended to me by a listener, and I am pleased to be giving it a try. This is the IOTA PromoNet, and I've got links in the show notes and in the Enhanced Podcast to where you can find IOTA PromoNet and take a listen to some of the music that they have offered there. Tonight's music is called White Lines and Red Lights, kind of appropriate considering the way we started today's show. This is by a band called Between the Trees, and I've got links in the show notes to where you can find the song on iTunes, on Amazon, and where you can find more information about the artists. So between this week and next, I hope you enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.
I'm lost without your love. Yeah.